So we are wrapping up a series today, The King and Queen, and we've been looking at Revelation chapter 2 and 3, where we see Jesus, who really is the author of Revelation. He is the resurrected and reigning King of kings of the universe, and he is doing an audit of his church, the bride. He writes a letter. He writes seven letters to seven different churches in that day, and he is investigating. He calls these churches lampstands because each of these churches are to be the light of Jesus in the city that they have been planted. And Jesus goes into the positive things. Here's where you're doing really well, church. And then he also has some really hard things for the church to hear. Here's where you need to get more aligned with me, and here's your challenge. Here's where you need to go going forward. And if you don't get this figured out, Jesus says, I'm going to turn off your lampstand. I'm going to remove your lampstand. I will literally turn out your light. And these letters, though, aren't just for these seven churches that existed in the first century AD. These churches, these letters are for us. They're for all churches, all times, all places. So Revelation kind of starts off in verse 3 and says, God blesses the one who reads the words of this prophecy to the church. He blesses all who listen to its message and obey what it says, for the time is near. So today, I thought it would be appropriate to close out this series to say, what if Jesus were walking amongst our lampstand today, investigating what he sees at Discovery? What would he find? What would he see, and what would he say to us? What would he say to Discovery? Now, I've been now here for just a little over 6 months, and we have been in investigation mode. We've had a lot of fun, my family and I, exploring a new city for us to live in. We've had fun learning about Pittsburgh. My wife put on Facebook yesterday, hey, this is our first Christmas season here, and we're looking for like some, what do you do? What are fun things that we don't know about? And man, you guys are like, comment. Here's this. We've got our calendar is completely full for December because of all these cool things that you guys are telling us. We love exploring it. I've loved learning the history of Pittsburgh and kind of where it's going in the future. And I've got a few observations that maybe you've noticed as well. One is that Pittsburgh is a city that has undergone a massive renewal. At the beginning of the city, it really took off and started off really well because of industries like the steel industry and made Pittsburgh a major prominent city in the U.S. and a player on the global stage. But around 1980, those same industries collapsed. And it turned into a really dark time for the city. Lots of people lost their jobs. It was a real downward spiral. But today, it's easy to see that there is new life here in Pittsburgh. Lots of new tech companies and healthcare companies and all these different companies coming in. And Pittsburgh has on those lists, right, that it's a great jobs in this city that are available to people. It's always on those lists when you see them from time to time on Facebook or Google or wherever. They'll say, you know, the most livable cities in the U.S. Pittsburgh is usually one of at the top. It's really gone through a season of renewal. And because of that, there's another observation, is that there's always lots of people moving into the city, around this area, but they're lacking something. Because they're from someplace else, they've got relationships from someplace else, that they want authentic relationships, but they end up settling for surfacey ones. That there's this lack of connection, that we live in close proximity with lots and lots of people, but there's very few authentic relationships. Lots of people always moving in. Another thing about the city of Pittsburgh that it's quick to observe is that this is a city that finds its identity in competition. in competing. I mean, I look out there right now, and I'm seeing jersey, 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 jersey. And my first Sunday here, tons of Pens jersey. It was right during the playoffs of last year, and everybody's wearing their Pens stuff. Everybody got their Pirate stuff in the summer, maybe not as much, right? But you got your Steeler stuff. And so I went out, and I got a Steelers jersey today for this message, because I'm like, I've got to, because I relate to this. I am super competitive. I told you guys last week, and I love living in a city that loves competition. I do. I love living here. And I've lived in other big cities, Indianapolis, Indiana. I've lived in Miami, Florida. I've lived in Orlando, Florida. And there's teams there too, and good sports towns, but nothing like this. I mean, a city where all the teams share the same color, where the city really bleeds black and gold. It's fun to be a part of someone as competitive as I am. But the thing that I love most about living here is really, and I'm not pandering to the crowd, is to discovery. I love this church. I love this church. And here I've been in investigation mode for two. You see, a lot of lead pastors, when they come into a church for the first time and they are hired to be the new lead pastor, they see a lot of things that they want to change, and they start changing everything. And I've really tried my best. You know, there's little things we try to change, maybe here and here, there's little things. But to really go into a mode of looking and listening and learning and seeing, like, what are the things, God, that you are doing well here amongst us? And what are the things that need to be pruned? What are the things that we're not doing well so that we can continue becoming what you want us to be? And today's message is really kind of out of those 6 months of what I have seen, what I have heard from many of you, what I believe I've heard from God, what I believe God wants to do in the future. And I believe if Jesus were to write a letter to us today, to our church, to hear now, I think he would have some things where he would give us an applause and cheer us on and say, yes, that's what I'm talking about. You keep doing those things. So I want to give you a few of those things right out of the gate. And there's probably more, but here's the first one. I think Jesus would say first to us, you love others and you throw parties just like I do. And that's a good thing. When Jesus was on this earth, he didn't seek out. He didn't go and spend his time with the religious elite, those who thought that they had their act together. That wasn't the people he intentionally sought out. Instead, he went after the outcast. He went after the marginalized. He went after those who maybe weren't invited to many of the parties of the day. Matter of fact, one of those outcasts, we see this encounter in Matthew chapter 9. It says Jesus was walking along and he saw a man named Matthew sitting at his tax collector's booth. Now this guy was an outcast because of his job, not because of who he was, but because of what he did. He was a tax collector. He was a Jew who worked for the enemy. He worked for the Roman Empire, who taxed the Israelites to a point where they had, a lot of them had to sell their land to make ends meet. And they saw Matthew as a traitor who was making money off of their tough situation. And so Jesus comes along and sees Matthew and says, I want you to follow me. And Matthew does. And Matthew is so wrecked by this encounter with Jesus. He says, I'm going to throw a party at my house for Jesus and the disciples, and I want to invite everybody I know. And of course, everybody on his contact list, on his phone, was just other tax collectors and disreputable sinners, the other outcasts. So here's the scene where there's Matthew at his beautiful home with all these other tax collectors, all these other people that you would see on the side of the street, and you would go to the other side of the street to walk by. And the Pharisees come by, the religious elite, and they can't stand it. And they're like to the disciples, Jesus' disciples, why would he spend so much time with this scum? And Jesus heard this. He said, healthy people don't need a doctor, but sick people do. I have come to call not those who think that they're righteous, but those who know that they're sinners. And unfortunately, there are many churches today, you hear about it all the time, who adopt the same Pharisaical attitude of, if you want to be a part of us, you got to get your act together first. You got to clean yourself up. You're not welcome here unless you look like us. But what I have seen at Discovery, what you have had in your DNA of this church, this culture, is anybody's welcome here. No matter who you are, it's okay not to be okay. But it's not okay to stay there. That's where Jesus is. He always wants us to become more like him. I've heard other people say about this church, but you've said, we don't take ourselves seriously around here, but we take the mission of Jesus very seriously. I love that. I think Jesus would say that's a great positive thing about Discovery. Another thing is that you throw great Jesus parties. Jesus talked about one of these parties in Luke chapter 14. He said, when you put on a luncheon or a banquet, don't invite your friends or brothers or relatives and rich neighbors, for they'll invite you back, and that will be your only reward. Instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. And then at the resurrection of the righteous, God will reward you for inviting those who could not repay you. And one of the first things I got to witness, one of the first months I was here, was the 7th annual Night to Remember party. Where it's like you're looking at this verse, these words from Jesus, and seeing it played out and right in front of you. And then a few months later, or just a few months ago, we had our Day to Remember for the younger children at Fun for All. It's fun to see all the smiles there, and it's great because it doesn't put the spotlight on Discovery, but it puts the spotlight on these guests with special needs who get to be celebrated and cheered on and have the time of their lives. And I think Jesus would say, yes, keep going, and cheer that on. Which leads, these events lead me to the next thing I think Jesus would cheer us on about. Is that Jesus would say to us, you are most like me when you are a hub of compassion. One of my favorite things about A Night to Remember that I got to see for the first time was at the red carpet. The line of people on the sides. You kind of see them there in the background, just the rows and rows of people, and many of those people have no connection to Discovery. A lot of these people have no connection even to the guests who are there with special needs. They're there because they've heard about this party and they want to be a part of it, which is so incredibly cool. I was talking to someone else who said, you know, one of my favorite memories of Discovery was several years ago where we had another party, where we had a meal packing party for refugees in our community. And we gathered together, and we packed thousands and thousands and thousands of meals, and guess who came to it? People who might be reluctant or a little skeptical about coming to a church worship service like this, but had no problem saying, you know what, I want to be a part of that. I want to pack meals for people in our community who are in need. And so that was another party. And I think Jesus would say to us, you are most like me when you are not only serving, but creating opportunities that will draw other people to be a hub of compassion so that they will serve alongside you. I think we need to not only to keep doing those things, but to create more opportunities so that we can really be that hub of compassion. Let me show you this. In the 1950s or the 1980s, this is how a typical person kind of came into the church. First, that they would come to a church service like this, and maybe at one point they would say, yeah, I believe in Jesus. And then they would belong to that church. I believe, now I belong to the church, and now I'm becoming more like Jesus because I'm learning more about Jesus, I'm studying my Bible, I'm becoming more like Jesus. That was the progression for most people in a church in those decades. But in 1990, something began to shift. Churches began to focus on small groups. We call them journey groups around here because some people were like, you know what, man, I don't really want to go to a church service. I don't really get the organized religion thing, you know, or whatever. We're not organized at Discovery at all, so I don't know what they're talking about. But maybe that wasn't how they would be their doorway to Jesus. So they started small groups. So what it looked like is they would be a part of a small group where they would belong first. Hey, I belong to this group. I get to rub my shoulders with other Christians. Hey, you're not weird. You don't bite heads off chickens. I belong here. And then they begin to, I believe in this Jesus. I believe in him. And they become more like him. That's the progression kind of in the 1990s. But this is beginning to shift again, especially with the millennial crowd and others, because they have a strong sense of purpose. They see the problems of this world and they say, oh, we got to do something about it. We want to be a part of social justice and other things like those things. And so they might be reluctant to come to a church worship service, but they have no problem when they see a thing like a night to remember, or a day to remember, or a meal packing event that helps refugees and serve the city. And so that might be their first door. And so it begins to look like this, that first they become like Jesus, they are serving like Jesus, oftentimes before they even really know who Jesus is. And they're serving alongside other Christians. They're like, wow, this group is legit. They're authentic. They're serving in ways, they're making a difference in this world. I can belong to this. And then they believe. And I think Jesus would applaud and commend us for becoming a hub of compassion, but cheering us on, saying, look, you got to keep going. Keep connecting people in the city to who I am. I think Jesus would also say this, that when you are all in, I have done great things in your midst. When everybody has their hands in and no one's on the sidelines, but when you are all in, I've done some great things in your midst. You know, Discovery is 15 years old. It's like, what a young church. I have shirts in my dresser drawer that are older than 15 years. Honestly, I do. And as a 15-year-old church, we kind of look like a 15-year-old kid sometimes. Kind of in that, kind of figuring out what my identity is. Kind of in transition a little bit. But 16 years, think about it. Discovery was not here. If you look back 16 years ago, this lampstand was not yet placed here in Cranberry Township. And yet, in those 15 years, we've watched hundreds and hundreds of people come to know Jesus, have been obedient to him in baptism. Hundreds and hundreds of people. Do you know the average church sees 1.5 baptisms a year? I'm not even sure how you baptize half a person. But that's all they see. Hundreds and hundreds of people in 15 years. God has done that. In the last 6 months, we've watched over 20 people come to know Jesus, be baptized into him. And that's without even a baptistry in this building. We got to pull out a tub and get it with hot water and do all of that to make sure it happens. I mean, God did that. We've helped in 15 years plant churches here in the city of Pittsburgh, in other parts of the U.S., other parts of the world. God did that. We've watched people among us, two families, get disturbed by things going on in the world, feel God calling them to leave their comfortable house, leave their comfortable job, and go to another country to serve the poor, to bring the light of Jesus to the country of El Salvador. We've watched that happen in our midst. God did that. And you know what else I love about Discovery? In the first several years of this church is not afraid of stepping up to the plate and taking massive, huge faith swings. Even if they, even when it's incredibly risky. Early on in the church, after this church kind of got established in Cranberry Township, this church began to plant two other campuses in other parts of the city. I didn't even know about that until Tony was telling me about it one day over coffee. And he was saying, you know, yeah, there's things I would do differently. And all the church planning experts out there were saying, you shouldn't do it. You're too young. You shouldn't be overextending yourself the way that you are. But we just felt like God was calling us to do it. We started the other two campuses. Now, obviously, those two campuses aren't in existence because we don't talk about them. They're not in existence anymore. So some people would go, that's a failure. What a failure that is. Tony doesn't see it that way. I don't see it that way. The lead team doesn't feel that. There are people today who know Jesus because those two campuses were in existence. There are people in our church today who are leading, help lead our church because they came to one of those campuses first, and now they're here helping us go forward. And we cannot be afraid of failure. We got to keep stepping up to the plate when God calls us and take huge faith swings. It wouldn't be faith if it wasn't risky. Another big swing came in 2010 because Discovery was taking off. The first 7 years of Discovery. Look at this graph. This is the first 7 years of Discovery. You see how that increases every year till 2010, almost to 2011. And what happened at that time, this church began to grow so much, they were like, hey, we got to go buy some property. We got to buy some land. So we took a swing at 228, bought some land, began to design a building and all the things that we're going to do on this property to help increase what God is doing already at Discovery. And then something happened right at 2011. And this is where I think Jesus would go from his positive cheering on things to us to go, I've got some hard words, church, for you. I've got some hard things that I need to tell you. And I think he would say to us, Discovery, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? I mean, you saw on the first graph, the first 7 years of the church. Let me show you the next 7 years. The 2011 to now. And I was talking to people after service. They're like, you know what? I've always felt that. But seeing it definitely speaks to what I've been feeling. Just this, what happened in 2011 where the church all of a sudden stopped climbing, stopped pursuing, stopped chasing after God and what he was calling us to, and all of a sudden just started going, this is good enough. This is good enough. Listen, I don't know for sure what happened in 2011 or 2012. What happened in that? It could be one thing. It could be multiple things. Could it be that our focus went from all of us being the church, and instead our focus became set on building a church? Buying into the lie that, you know, once we get a building, then we'll really be a legit church. Then God can really do great things through us. And then the land has kind of hovered there for a long time, and it got stuck in a lawsuit, and finally got sold, and just never, things never recovered. Is it the land, or is it a lot more than that? I do know this, because I don't think it matters why this happened. I think what matters is that 2 weeks ago, I asked the question, do you want to be a part of a movement, or do you want to be part of a museum? And everyone said, movement. I want to be part of a movement. And everyone would look at that first graph and go, yeah, that's a movement. Things are moving. God's doing something. And I don't think anybody would look at this last one and go, yeah, that's not a movement. What will be said about us in 2025? That's the question I want to ask. What will we do now to make sure that this isn't the continual trend at Discovery? I told you that my first 6 months here has been largely spent looking, listening, learning. And one question that I've asked a lot of different people, probably asked you at a time or another, is if you could give me one word, how would you describe Discovery today? And I've written down a lot of words. And I'm going to share some of those words with you right now. These are not from me. These are from you. Stuck. Malaise, drifting, unfocused, unmotivated, apathetic, waiting, afraid, paralyzed. Man, that last one struck me hard. When I heard that one, it was like, yeah, that really sums up all the other answers. And listen, again, this is hard to hear, especially when, you know, I love this church, you love this church, and it's hard to see this. And it makes me think of this encounter that Jesus had with a man in John chapter 5. And here's the background in verse 1. It says, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. And now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by 5 covered colonnades. And here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed, and they waited for the moving of the water. And here's, they believe this legend that from time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. And the first one into the pool after each such disturbance would be cured of whatever disease that they had. But one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. I want you to try to imagine that scene. Just, I'm not sure how many a multitude is. Is it dozens? Is it hundreds? Hundreds of people with disabilities lying around this pool in the city of Jerusalem, and they're waiting. and they're waiting because they believe this legend that that from time to time this angel will come and will stir the waters, and whoever gets in that water first in that moment will be healed of their ailments. And one of the people in the multitude was a man who could not walk. He'd been there for 38 years. That's longer than Jesus had even been on the earth. So Jesus is a baby in a manger, and that man had already been there for 8 years. And all these people are waiting for something or someone to come along and take care of their needs. And I think there is that churches today, a lot of churches today, mirror this picture. I told you guys a couple weeks ago that 80% of churches are in the state of plateau or declining. And right now, we've got to admit, face the facts, that we're in that group right now. And many of these churches are just sitting by this pool waiting for something to happen, waiting for someone to stir the waters, waiting for someone to stir the spirit among us and say, let's go. I think Jesus would say to us today, what are you waiting for, Discovery? And Jesus walks in and walks past all the other people. He goes directly to this one man and issues him a challenge. And here's the challenge that Jesus would give us today. This is when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? And the invalid replied, sir, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. Why, while I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. And Jesus said to him, get up. Pick up your mat and walk. And at once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. Jesus asked him a question. Do you want to get well? And the man goes right. He doesn't answer the questions. He goes right into his excuses. Well, Jesus, I've been here for 38 years. No one helps me. Everybody else here has help. I mean, have some pity on me, man. And Jesus isn't even listening to his excuses. And I believe Jesus were to ask us that same question, Discovery, do you want to get well? And we could go into those same excuses. Well, Jesus, I mean, look at us. We don't have a building. I mean, feel sorry for us. I mean, you know what happened at 228, right? You know what that is. We have to set up and tear down every week, Jesus. I mean, look at all the other churches in our area. They got their land. Look at them. That should have been us. We've had key leaders who've moved away. What are we going to do, Jesus? And Jesus' reaction here is he doesn't even touch the man. He doesn't, sometimes when he heals others in the New Testament, you see him touch the person or rub their eyes and heal them or whatever. He doesn't even touch them. He doesn't pull some miraculous rabbit out of his robes. He doesn't make a flashy scene. He just tells the guy, get up. Pick up your mat. And walk. No more excuses. And the man obeys and is healed. And this is the command. I believe if Jesus were writing this letter to us today, that would be the command he would give us. Discovery, get up. Pick up your mat and walk. Not talking about your lead pastor. Pick up your mat and walk. You want to be part of a movement? I mean, what are you waiting for? Get up. Do what you've been doing. Love people like I love them. Throw parties like I throw parties. All these people who have these surfacey relationships who've moved in, who are looking for authentic relationships, you should be inviting them to be part of what God is doing in your life. Invite them to be part of what God is going to do through Discovery. Everyone, go all in. Not just 20% of you. Everybody, all hands in. And begin to take big faith swings again. And just watch what I will do immeasurably more in your midst when you do. So I want you to understand that when I accepted this job 6 months ago, I knew all this. This wasn't like I got here and I saw the number. I was like, oh, I didn't know this was going on. Bait and switch. You know? No. I'm here. Because I believe God has got crazy potential for Discovery. That our next 7 years are going to look a lot different. I believe that. I'm not saying that because I got to say that. That doesn't look good. No. I moved my family here because I believe this. I believe we have the right leaders in this church, the right people in this church, and definitely the right Jesus who wants to do something through his bride. And I'm not talking just like, I believe God's going to start making us go like this again. I believe it'll blow our minds if we all put our hands in and say, we want to be part of a movement, Jesus, and we're following you. And if you will allow me to, I want to be a part and lead this for a long time coming. A long time coming. As Paul said, I want you to follow me as I follow Jesus. I will keep pointing you. This is Jesus. This is where we're going. I want to be a part of that. And I believe, and I'm not just saying this again, 2019, I think, will be the best year Discovery's ever seen because of what we have coming up. And I believe Discovery, just like the city of Pittsburgh did, will go through a time of renewal. And the good news is Jesus is in the renewal business. At the end of Revelation, John sees a vision of heaven, and Jesus is on the throne, and Jesus says, look, I am making everything new. I'm making everything new, Discovery. So here's what it's going to take. It's going to take all of our hands, not 20% of us, 100% of us, putting all of our hands in three areas. One of them is everyone growing. Everyone growing. Because if you're not growing, you're dying. Everyone growing. Jesus says in John 15, he says, remain in me as I remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. And Jesus makes it clear, I am the vine, Jesus says. You are the branches. And if you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. You will grow. And apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. And such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. The reason why I think 2019 will be the best year ever is because our first quarter of 2019 is all focused, honed in on everyone growing. Everyone connecting to the vine. Because if we're connected to the vine, God's going to grow. Not us. We can't manipulate that. God's got to do it. And that's why we keep talking about, hey, the first quarter, all of us hands in on Rooted. All of us need to be signed up. I just went upstairs to check. We have a little scoreboard up there just to keep our eyes on it. We have over 40 people right now signed up for Rooted, and December hasn't even hit yet. I'm excited about that. Our goal is to see by January 27th, 250 people signed up. So if you're not in Rooted yet, you need to get on the website and sign up so we can get that 250. All of us, all hands in, going through Rooted, connecting, growing in Jesus. Everyone serving is the next one. These next two verses, really quickly. Revelation 1:6 says that Jesus has made us a kingdom of priests for God his Father. A kingdom of priests. And then Peter says, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. The church has done you a disservice a lot of times. If you come from a Catholic church, you got the priest over here and you got the people over here. In a lot of churches, you got the pastors over here, you got the people over here. And there's this us and them mentality when that's not the way it's supposed to be. When you are a follower of Jesus, you are instantly a pastor. You are a minister. You are a priest of the gospel of Jesus if you're a follower of Christ. When you go to our website, you'll see, hey, there's 7 pastors in this church. No, there are over 400 pastors of Discovery. It's you. We are a kingdom of priests, a kingdom of pastors, and every one of us need to be doing the work that God has called us to do. Everyone growing, everyone serving, everyone competing. Come on, Pittsburgh. Everyone competing. So I come from Indianapolis, and I'll be honest with you. I'm wearing this jersey today. If the Colts and the Steelers are playing, I'm going for the Colts. I'm sorry, I am. In 2006, we had our one Super Bowl championship. 2006. And I think we had to go through the Steelers to get there, if I remember right. I was there at the parade. I was in the old Hoosier Dome to watch the celebration. But you know what happened next year? Nothing. We won a championship. It was fun. I'm also a New York Yankees fan. 27 championships. No other team in the U.S., professional team, to have more championships. You know what? We didn't win this year. The year before that. And those championships, they really matter. Paul says this. He says, you've all been to the stadium. You've seen the athletes race. Everyone runs. One wins. Run to win. All good athletes train hard. They do it for a gold medal that tarnishes and fades. Every Lombardi trophy, every Stanley Cup tarnishes. Everyone fades. It goes into the memory bank. Remember that one year? It says, you're after the one that's gold eternally. And Paul says, I don't know about you, but I'm running hard for the finish line. I'm giving it everything I've got. No sloppy living for me. I'm staying alert. I'm in top condition. I'm not going to get caught napping, telling everyone else about it, and then missing it out myself. I don't want discovery to miss it. I don't want you to miss it. What God wants to do in your life, what God wants to do through us as a church. And so my challenge to us today is, what are we waiting for? Jesus says, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. And so what I want to do today, how I want to close, instead of getting up, I'm going to do the opposite. I want to lead us into prayer, and the best way to submit, to show Jesus, you are the Lord of this, you are the head of this church, is to submit ourselves. And I'm going to get on my knees. And I would, if you are physically able and you are in with us and you want to be a part of this, I'm going to ask you to get on your knees as well to our King and ask God to lead us. His best is yet to come for us. Would you just bow with me? Would you kneel with me if you are able to do so? And would you just pray with me? Jesus, you are our King. You are the Lord of our life. You are the Lord of this church. You're the head of this church and always will be. And God, we want you, your name, to be great in this city and in this world. And we want what you want here. Not our will, but your will done here. God, walk amongst our lampstand. Walk among our church. And God, there's people in this room today who have things going on in their life, that issues that have been dealing with for years and years and years. And God, no excuses. I ask that you would say to them today, say to me today, get up, pick up your mat and walk, follow me. You offer us full life, real life, life to the full, that we would seize that. We would make you Lord of our life, not just part of our life, the compartmentalized part over here, but in all of our life, that you would be the Lord of everything. And that we would be a church, God, where Jesus, you reign complete. God, right here, right now, I want this to be a line in the sand kind of moment for us. Where God, you take us in directions we've never experienced before, because we are all growing and we are all serving and we're all competing for the prize that never fades. We give you this church. We give you our lives. And the church said, amen.